Richard, how we doing? Des, you're up late, brother.
Hi Greg, how's it going?
How are you doing, all right?
Yeah, good. Yeah, late one over here.
Where are you?
I cost.
Near it.
Oh, okay, yeah, so same time as me then, yeah. So it's a late one.
How about you?
I'm from Dublin, but I'm in Cardiff.
Oh, nice.
Well, it's all right. If I ever left Dublin, I always said it would be for somewhere sunny, and I moved to Cardiff. You there, Mats?
I hear you.
Richard, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Broke down in the truck. I'm out on the road, but I'm working on the truck. But life of a trucker. But
Life
yeah,
of a
it's been
trucker,
good.
brother.
Yeah, well, that's the way it is, you know. Things happen, so everybody has their, ups and downs. So it's just part of it. But going well.
Good, good. Gregory, boss.
Went from looking like a homeless person to now I'm looking like a criminal.
It's a
I like it. I like it. You're handsome.
Matt's
Gentlemen.
there, Thompson.
Andrew, how are you, man?
I'm good. Just got back from the gym. I think I pushed it a little too hard because I was excited, but no, it was well. It
What does that even mean? I pushed you hard.
I didn't bring enough food, so like I'm jumping on this call. I need to eat, and I'm like shaking a little bit, so I'm just grabbing something
Go get
before the
some food,
call.
man. Yeah, go get it. Thompson's
I'm
getting it in,
good.
man. Everybody get it in.
I slammed something down, so I'm good.
Nice. Very cool. Just low turnout today. Did we promote the call? Did we drop the link in the chat?
Went up yesterday.
If, yesterday. Yeah, strange. Everyone, how are things going here, gents? Thompson, how are things with you?
Really good. Really sticking to this meal plan, which is tough for me, like my fancy foods, but really sticking to it. Talked to Greg the other day, talked to Coach Gavin. Didn't miss a single workout, sticking to the meal plan, avoiding a lot of temptations. So, yeah, all good.
Love it, man. And so, man, if I was like in your gym every day to yell profanities like I do, I would really, the thing I would really lean on you for, the thing I would really force you to do is go heavy when you don't want to. Like I would make just like, kind of like we did in Spain, exactly like we did in Spain. I was like, Thompson, grab those heavy weights and fucking go. And so your body, because your body, so I think I talked about this, but like your skeleton is going to be the limiting factor in your ability to lift weights. So it's going to be as you pick up a weight, your bones are going to flex. And until your bones lose the amount of flex they have, your body won't load the muscles. So we have to increase the end-to-end compression on the bones to allow the bones to be a little less have a little less flex. So the more you can hold heavy shit in your hands and put it on your spine, the more your long bones end to end. Like everyone's bones have flex, but the stronger you get, the less they flex. They become more like steel or concrete. And so your first order of business over the first 3 to 6 months is I need to put heavy shit on my body. So like squats, deadlifts, farmers carries, shrugs. So like anything that requires you to like put, you're so heavy, you're like, look, I can't hold this. That like we were doing in Spain, that's really what you need to do. And so that's not often a consideration in people's training program, is it? Like, how many of you guys have heard that concept before? Your skeleton will limit your body's ability to lift weight. Like people don't think like that. So the bigger somebody's skeleton in, like circumference wise, the bigger their bones, the more weight they can bear, right? The bigger their joints, the more weight they can bear. And if you're someone who's all over your life, I've had a lot of impact, like weight-bearing exercise and compression on the bones. The bones are more dense, the bones are more thick, so they'll have less give to them. So someone like yourself, Thompson, like you could spend the next year lifting as heavy as you possibly can to just get the bone density up a little bit, and then it'll be almost like a hockey stick like curve. So like you got to load, man, and it's got to be frequent. It doesn't have to be huge amounts of volume of heavy stuff, but it's almost got to be like every workout.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah, man. And the almost the opposite is true. Well, same in some instances for older men, like similar situation where guys start to lose their bone density, right? But oftentimes old guys lose bone density, but gain what they lack in bone density in tissue tension, right? So guys get super tense because the bone density is starting to drop. So in older guys, it's like you got to build the strength of the bones, but then you got to build the fluidity or length through the muscles. So we're trying to create less tension through the muscles for older guys. So it's an interesting, kind of thought process. Greg, I know this is your show. I don't want to interrupt.
Oh, sorry, no rush. Want to
Does
call?
anyone have any wins you guys want to share from the week? Anyone have anything awesome happen?
I want to thank Greg
Al, if you could
for
talk a little louder, I can hear you talking, but I can't hear much.
I want to thank Greg for helping out with
Richard.
the supplements and looking at my all my scores and stuff, all my numbers from my recent blood test. And I went to the doctors, and he was very surprised and very happy with the results. My bad cholesterol went down 60 points from 6 months ago when he tested last. So he was very happy, and that was a big win for me. So I do appreciate Greg very much for you helping Andrew and I out on that. Thank you.
Love it, man. So for those of you guys that didn't hear what he said, he was thanking Greg for dropping his cholesterol by 60 points. The doctors were very happy with his markers. Awesome, man. Little things, Richard, like pushing performance, taking a few performance supplements can support even the simplest foundational health things. Big win, man. I love it.
Big win. Richard's was one of the very few blood tests I see where there's literally nothing to pick out of, or very,
Wow.
very little, genuinely.
Wow. That's awesome. Something cool that I'll share with you guys. So, will a win for me. You guys know that I'm a big fan of Dr. John DeMartini. Many of you guys have heard me talk about him. I've done many of his classes. Turns out we've actually just solidified to bring him to Toronto for one day in August. So I'm hosting a live event in August, really focused on optimization of brain function, but John looks at it through like brain function in terms of balancing stress. So he's going to be coming and talking about values and stress. So it'll be a full day. We might even turn into a full weekend, but as of now, it's going to be a full day event in August in Toronto. So John DeMartini doesn't do a lot of live events. He does all of his stuff online because he travels so much. So I feel blessed and honored to be part of an event hosting him here in Toronto. So I'll keep you guys posted on the dates if anyone wants to come down for that. Maybe we could tandem it with some training sessions.
Ben, you had mentioned that Dr. DeMartini was going to be doing a seminar in Houston live, I think in August or maybe September. Sounds like, I mean, it seems I live in Houston, but I've sounded like I'd probably be better off going to Toronto. What are your thoughts?
No, man, I would be the one in Houston. So the one we're doing in Toronto is just a one day seminar, like basically him talking. His in Houston is a workshop. You're gonna get way more of the one in Houston.
Got it. Okay.
And
Thank you.
it's probably a little more expensive to go to the one in Houston, but man, for where you are in your life, Matt, I would move heaven and earth to go to that one. That one's fucking awesome. It's the one Greg did. Greg, would you say it was valuable?
Oh, it was an absolute game changer. Talk about putting perspective on actually where you want to go in your life, and it does it really quickly and aggressively. Don't get me wrong, like it's not an easy weekend, but it'll change you. You can't, like I like the saying, you can't unsee it afterwards.
Love that. Thank you.
All right, Greg, I'll let you do your thing, man. I just want
Ready
to
to
come
rock
on
and
soon.
roll? Okay, gentlemen, as you know, when you guys see me, it's generally going to be something to do around nutrition or physiology. The last few times we've done these, we've been really specific. So we've talked about whether it was gut health, cardiovascular health, brain health. There was something I did when I, at the very beginning when I started with muscle intelligence, and we talked about metabolic flexibility. And I wanted to kind of go back, and because a lot of the guys who are on this call probably wouldn't have been here 16 months ago. So I want to go back and talk about metabolic flexibility. It sounds really basic because it is. But I don't know if Ben coined it, but he's the one who mentioned it to me, saying energy production almost dictates everything. So our ability to be able to produce energy is going to dictate how we feel, how we perform, and how healthy we are, or the absence of disease, right? And that's going to be based around this concept called metabolic flexibility.
So just
And
pause for a sec, Greg.
yeah,
Just,
go.
does everyone get that? Did everyone hear that? Like, I think you hear it, but I want you to know it. So what Greg said was energy is everything. So energy production at the level of the cell, this is not just some esoteric thought of like my energy. It's like literally energy production at the level of the cell is everything. If your body produces energy well, you're going to be healthy. If it doesn't produce energy well, you're going to be ill. It's literally that simple. It's the foundation of everything. So our primary target as humans is like get to the bottom of energy production, which is really what he's talking about today. I just want to harp on that a little bit.
Yeah, and that's a good point, right? We're not trying to make this esoteric. It's not a spiritual thing. This is genuinely at a cellular level how we produce energy. And everything, so any sort of condition you can think of from Western civilization, bar possibly some rare genetic disorders, are going to have this as a component to it. So if we don't produce energy effectively, like Ben just said, it's going to affect everything in our lives. But we can discuss where it goes wrong. But what is it? And it's such a simple concept. It's our ability to be able to shift fuel sources based off our demands. That's it. So when we train aggressively or with high intensities, we want to be able to use glucose. When we are at rest, when we are working, I'm talking about like your jobs or whether we're trying to be cognitively there, we want to be able to use fats for fuel. But we as people, and as you'll see, like in the West a lot now, we have lost that ability to be able to shift fuel sources. And we'll talk about some of the symptoms as well that come with that, because some of you still, although you perceive yourselves as healthy and you're doing all the right things, still might suffer with this a little bit. We'll go through some slides. We'll pop in and out of it, but let me share a screen with you first. Ooh. Let me get this going and then we'll get into it. So, metabolic flexibility, like I just touched on, it's all it is the ability to be able to shift from carbohydrate metabolism to fat metabolism, from glucose to fat. It sounds basic, but there are so many different attributes or aspects within this that can affect how we do it. And you guys have probably heard the phrase, whether I'm giving you flashbacks of biology or physiology back in school at some stage, you'll hear the phrase like the mitochondria. We always used to think about it as like the energy powerhouse of the cell. So it's where we actually produce energy. It's important to remember the food that we eat doesn't directly give us energy, right? It's like going into a casino. You go into a casino with cash, but you can't play with it. You have to trade it in for chips. And that's very similar to when we try and produce energy at a cellular level. So the actual energy substrate is called ATP. And we have to go through all these different processes in order to create it effectively. And there's all these exogenous outside the body, endogenous inside the body things that can affect how we do it. So when people turn around, they say, I can't lose body fat. I can't put on muscle. I can't get out of bed in the morning. I struggle to sleep at night. I guarantee there's a component here, right? Now, what are we going to actually try and learn about? Without going into too much detail, I was going to go a little bit more detail into biochemistry. Probably not worth it, right? We just want to know what the different sides of this equation are. We know what it is now. So all it is to be able, is the ability to be able to flux or shift from carbohydrates to fat. And I'll explain why that's important. How we lose it, how we can get it back, lifestyle considerations, training considerations, right? But people look at this and it gives them an awful shock initially. Don't worry about what all this means, right? But understand that one side of this equation will produce a lot of energy. The other side will make a lot less, but will make it very quickly. And I'll explain to you why that's important. Okay. So on the left-hand side, you can see glucose. This is sugar. This is carbohydrate that we eat. This can be produced outside of the mitochondria. The mitochondria, again, being that powerhouse of the cell, it spits out energy. It allows us to do all the things that we're supposed to do. It allows us to be cognitively on point when you're doing a work task. It allows you to shift and be dad and be husband and be all those other things effectively. But we can produce energy outside of the cell. It happens re or outside of the mitochondria. It happens really quickly and is quite effective when we're doing stuff at a really high intensities. But where the problem is for a lot of you, not necessarily you guys, but for a lot of people, is this is always how they produce energy. Because if we look at this side before anything gets in here, this will make 2 units of energy per unit of glucose. And that'll make sense in a second, right? 2 units of ATP, that's all. If you can get that carbohydrate into the cell, it'll make 32. If we use fatty acids for energy, it'll make 132. Think about that discrepancy at rest, right? Don't think about the training side of things right now, but at rest, if you're just using glucose and you and not getting into the mitochondria at all, you're making 2 units of energy per unit of glucose compared to if you use fat, you're making 132. That's a massive discrepancy in energy production. So when you see people on who are constantly left-hand driven, they're completely dictated by their appetite. So they can't make it from one meal to the next. They are moody throughout the day. Their energy status will flux throughout the day. They'll go from tired to energetic after they eat, then it'll drop a couple of hours later, and they're stuck on this roller coaster. Lots of people live this life day to day. Then they get into bed, toss and turn, they wake up tired the next morning, right? So we need to be able to learn how to go between these fuel sources based on the demand. Now, don't worry about all this. I was going to go through it, but there's probably no point. Now, I hope that makes sense initially, guys, before we start getting into how we can actually solve this problem. When we're training with high intensities, we want to be able to use glucose because it'll produce energy fast. It'll allow us to repeat the effort over and over again. When we're at rest, we want to be producing lots of energy very slowly. All our recovery happens on this right-hand side, fatty acid metabolism. We want to be breaking fat down. We want to be utilizing it. We want to be able to get it into the cell, get it into the mitochondria, and be able to produce energy. But we lose that ability for lots of different reasons. Okay. Now, I'll bring it back into the presentation in a second. But most of the reasons why we lose it, can anybody think why we would lose that ability to be able to shift from one side to the other? It's harder actually to answer than you'd think. Anybody think of a reason why we'd lose it? One of the ways is we'll get dependent on the carbohydrate side of it. So if we massively overfeed the body, so like you'll see it in people who, although you would look at them and think, right, this person's overweight, this person eats too much sugar, too much fat, too much carbohydrate, yet they're still always hungry. This is a mitochondrial problem. So there's something going wrong at the cellular level that doesn't allow them to use the nutrients they eat effectively. But there's a reason why that happens, because once you chuck, we saw the mitochondria in that presentation, right? If you just chuck loads of nutrients at that, loads of carbohydrates, loads of fat, it causes other issues. Like it'll start to create, we always hear about reactive oxygen species, we always hear about inflammation. You chuck a load of that stuff at a cell, it will start to cause all these problems. So we'll create what's called metabolic gridlock. The cell just says, I don't want anything else in here. Stop sending it in. And that's when you'll see, like I know Richard spoke about it earlier, cholesterol, not so much, but you'll see like high glucose, high triglycerides in people's blood markers because they're not using energy effectively anymore, right? So they've had a breakdown in this transition. Now, we'll get on to training modalities, but probably you guys will start to realize if you have all these substrates in the mitochondria that it can't burn through, what would be the most effective training modality in order to shift that? So you're not using carbs well, you're not using fats well because there's too much in the cell already. What training would you want to do to try and shift it? Anybody? So we want to create metabolic emergency. We've created metabolic gridlock, too much substrate. Aerobic work will start to burn through all that kind of stuff, right? So when people come in on phase one of our training program, depending on where you are, right, we always give loads of aerobic training. And it might be because you have high blood pressure, high resting heart rate, all these other things, but at a fundamental cellular level, you're trying to affect this. You're trying to allow a client or a person to be able to use fat for fuel effectively, right? Okay, one second. There is a lot of other ways where all this can go wrong, and we'll go through them quick, right? And then we can ask questions if we need to. So, don't worry about that. Well, there is a point to this, right? Like people always talk about mTOR all the time. I don't normally go through this part of it, but people talk about mTOR all the time because people want to put on muscle, and mTOR is the transcription factor that pushes muscle growth. But we don't want to be in that all the time either. mTOR causes the growth of everything. So people always say, like, oh, you know, I need to stimulate muscle protein synthesis. I need to stimulate mTOR. mTOR also grows fat cells. It also accumulates calcium in your arteries. It adds amyloid plaque to your brain. It increases cancer cells. So the ability to be able to shift between both of these things, like you want to stimulate muscle growth. You want to then afterwards be able to drop down and go to that like recycling phase of AMPK. So everything becomes, everyone thinks of catabolism or breakdown as a bad thing, but we need a blend of both. That's normally the best way you can think about those things. But overfeeding, type 2 diabetes, too much sugar, create metabolic gridlock, too many substrates in. It's a protective mechanism. You guys probably see it out there in the Twittersphere all the time. Oh, you've got high blood sugar, use this supplement. Maybe the cell doesn't want any more sugar in it because there's already too much in there and it's causing enough problems. So always be wary of that. People will talk about Banabelief, these glucose disposal agents to just shove glucose into a cell. That's not necessarily always effective. You need to find other ways. Immune activation. We'll go down to more applicable stuff in 2 seconds. But if you guys have like constant immune activation, if you're sick regularly, if you have gut dysbiosis, if you have parasitic infections, if you have viral infections, This stuff is all left-hand driven. The immune system only runs off glucose. So if you notice that you guys are sick all the time, it can these things can be the reason why you're struggling to stick to a meal plan because you're all left-hand dominant in this circumstance. So it needs to be corrected. And I'll show you how to do it in a little bit. And I'm sure I like to think of myself in a client's position sometimes, right? And when clients say to me, I'm not losing fat how I expected, I'm not gaining muscle how I expected, I feel like shit, I can't sleep, all those traditional things, right? And I turn around and I go, do you think it could be stress? Correct me if I'm wrong, it can sound like a cop out, right? From us. But stress or chronic stress response is almost patient zero to the vast majority of disease, right? It may seem like a cop out. Acute stress is great. You'll produce energy real fast. It'll take glucose out of glycogen. It'll take fat out of fat cells. It's great. It'll grab everything and try and make energy with it. But when it happens over and over and over again, same thing, metabolic gridlock. Mitochondria doesn't want anything else in there, right? So stress is a legitimate problem for the majority of you guys. I can promise you, you all do demanding things, whether that's work, whether that's training, whether that's dad, husband, partner, whatever it is. We all have stresses. We need to be able to mitigate them or become more resilient to them. Dysbiosis, mitochondria. Your gut directly speaks to your mitochondria. It's because both of them, well, the bacteria in your gut are obviously bacteria. Now, mitochondria was originally a bacteria. So these have like the similar DNA and there's crosstalk. So I've never had a client who had really bad gut issues who didn't have an energy issue at the same time. A lot of people come in with depression, fatigue, malaise, just general apathy, and their problem is in their gut. When someone tells you just a little asterisk there, when someone tells you all disease is created in the gut, that's not true. But a lot of the problems might be. So, like you find people with yeast overgrowth, too much hydrogen sulfide, these directly affect your ability to be able to produce muscle. Now, let's think about the stuff that we can actually affect a little bit more, guys. When you look at all those different aspects, so when we think about lifestyle, what can we change if we think about circadian rhythm? Who knows what circadian rhythms are, first of all? It's okay if you don't. Most of us probably don't. Circadian rhythm is based around sleep. So all it is at a very basic level is our perception of light to a certain extent. So our body has a natural 24-hour clock. That's created from the brain in a center called the suprachiasmatic nucleus, but it only reacts to light and darkness. So when we get up in the morning, we should look at light. We should create cortisol to wake us up. At nighttime, it should get dark. We create melatonin. We go asleep. The problem for a lot of us is we've flipped this. So how many of you guys actually have sleep disturbances, or who sleeps straight through for 8 hours? Yeah, Ben does. So, right? So. Same for a lot of us. Now, like, not everyone gets perfect night's sleeps. So I understand that. But our ability to be able to produce energy is based around our ability to be able to regulate our circadian rhythm. So, for a lot of you guys, you do a lot of the stuff wrong, I imagine. I do as well. But I always like the analogy of a child. Who's got kids? What happens at bedtime? We've all got, stru they've got structure, right? Do you drag them from in front of the television or by the scruff of the neck and lob them into bed and say, go sleep now? It won't work. But you do it for yourself. So you'll watch television or you'll be in front of your laptop like I'll be now. I'll go, oh, that presentation's over, laptop down, I'll go and try and lie down. I won't go sleep for an hour. But we have to be able to regulate circadian rhythms like anyone else because that dictates our ability to be able to produce energy. So there has to be a downtime in the evening and there has to be some sort of light exposure or vigorous activity in the morning. Okay? That is going to affect our ability.
Super.
Hello?
Quick
Contest.
question on that. Sorry to interrupt. You see, when you put your kid down to sleep and you're in a dark room, does that affect your circadian rhythm when you do that at, like, say, 7 o'clock at night when you go in a dark room and you're there for like 10, 15 minutes? Does that affect your circadian rhythm for the rest of the day, or how do you work around about that?
Are you talking about at evening time when you put your kid to bed? Yeah, that will affect circadian
Yeah.
rhythm. But that's realistically when we should be starting to expose ourselves to dark light, or dark light,
Okay.
darkness, I should say, because everything works in patterns. So it should be slowly down regulating as the evening goes on. So if you're in with your son or daughter, it's dark, then you should be coming out into like, you'll know it in certain people's houses who are aware of this. They have really like low light at night. They have like blue light blocking glasses on. They do all these things so they don't expose themselves to a lot of light. So yes, it will, but that's a positive thing at nighttime.
Got you. Thanks.
So when coaches are telling you guys like we need to have evening patterns, morning patterns, it's actually affecting your overall ability to be able to produce energy, right? So take it seriously. If you're not sleeping correctly, it's very hard to take someone out of an energy deficit. I don't mean like losing body fat, but like someone who doesn't feel great, doesn't have a lot of energy. It's very hard to get them out of that pattern if you don't sleep well. We can throw all the supplements we want at you, but sleep is probably paramount in that circumstance. Let me take you back in. We're nearly there. So circadian rhythms play a role in the function of the mitochondria. We won't go too much into detail on that, but they do. This is what all brought it all together for me. When you look at like some of the research, you see all these issues. Like when you look at like inflammation, the immune system, metabolism, dysbiosis, circadian rhythm, all these things that are involved with disease or like health, or then on the other side of that disease, they all have the mitochondria sat at the middle. So they all have energy production as one of the dominant mechanisms involved in them. So we have to correct whatever the issue might be. Some of you might be extremely vibrant, have loads of energy, it may not be an issue. But for some of you might have to deal with this. Let's look at some of the things that we can actually do. Dietarily, what are you willing to sacrifice, right? So some of you don't need to, these are in like levels of extremes. So like caloric restriction will help with that metabolic gridlock that we spoke about. Mediterranean diet is anti-inflammatory. Low carb may speed up the adaptation. Ketogenic diet may do it a little bit quicker. Now, what does all that mean? It means that some people don't use carbohydrates effectively, particularly at the beginning of a fat loss or a health journey. I don't know if your coach won't do it with everybody, but it's why a lot of clients who come through our door will go lower carbohydrate to begin, because we're trying to force that other side of the equation. We're trying to make you more efficient at burning fat at rest. Easy way to do that, remove carbohydrates. At the extreme end of that, right? Like Gavin has a client who, looking at his blood test, it was like, dude, this guy does not process carbohydrates at all. Let's try and pull them, see if he feels better. On the transition for the 3 days afterwards, he felt like he was not in a position to drive a car effectively. He felt drunk. Like his energy was so low from us removing the carbohydrate. But once he became fat adapted, his world changed. And he almost never wants to go back to that side of things. So we hear calories in, calories out. And I'm like, yep, never ignore it. But macronutrient distribution plays a big role here. Okay. So some people might need to go lower carb at the beginning. If you're trying to fix circadian clock, it's just about schedule, right? Eat at the same time, sleep at the same time, train at the same time. Last meal, no more than 2 hours before bed. There is other things that you can do in more extreme cases. Like if you wake up exhausted in the morning and you're going to bed wired and tired, You can use obviously stuff to down regulate at night, whether that's meditation, breath work, supplementation. But in the morning, you have to go out and you have to tell the body what time of day it is. You have to go out and get direct sunlight in the eye, or you can do vigorous exercise first thing in the morning for 2 to 5 minutes, and you'll start to correct that circadian clock. But the body loves schedule. It loves to do the same thing every day, if possible, as close as you can. I understand people travel and kids and all the rest of the stuff, but as much as possible will play a role there. Won't go too much into digestive health. I've done two or three presentations at some stage. You can go through those in a little bit more detail, but the removal of food triggers, whether they're proteins or FODMAPs. Lower carb can help. Stuff to fix your gut lining, zinc, glutamine, colostrum. These things can be of real benefit for a lot of people, vitamin A, vitamin D. But what can you guys track? These are really simple metrics to follow. Well, most of them are. Resting heart rate, blood pressure. You guys don't know those things. You have to know them. This is going to be a sign of whether you're sympathetic or parasympathetic, whether you're metabolically flexible or metabolically inflexible, right? So, resting heart rate, I'll show you in a minute where they kind of should be, but I'll show you guys what looks like someone who's metabolically inflexible. So, resting heart rate above 65. Anybody have a resting heart rate above 65? And you would take this at like the same time of day. So normally first thing in the morning, by the way. We'll all have slightly higher heart rates as the day goes through based off the stresses we're exposed to. Anybody have blood pressure above 120 over 80? And who knows their fasting glucose? Somewhere between 80 and 90 for the Americans and the Americans or Canadians in the room. Milligrams per deciliter is kind of where you want to be, right? Don't worry about that. Now, but this is why aerobic work is so important on phase one of muscle intelligence training. It's why we emphasize it so much because it affects all of those markers. It will make sure that you'll be able to shift based on the demand. So it'll improve resting heart rate, aerobic capacity, heart rate recovery, heart rate variability, parasympathetic tone, blood pressure, non-insulin mediated glucose uptake. Don't worry about what the last one means, but it does everything. If you have high blood pressure, high resting heart rate, you're not out squatting that. You're not out leg pressing that. You're not out bench pressing that. Aerobic work will do this for you. And then generally, that will get you into a position where you can have what I suppose, like what we would call optimal or ideal markers. So blood pressure, 120 over 80, 120 over 75, kind of gets you within the range you want it to be. 45 to 55 resting heart rate, fasting glucose, like I said, somewhere between 80 and 90 for you guys. And then for phase two, then for want of a better phrase, then we can really kick your ass and get after it, muscle building. We can get after it anaerobically and really challenge you. But remember, your ability to be able to shift energy sources is going to dictate how well you can recover from any of your training. So getting yourself into a position where you have markers like this allows your coach to kick your ass and not worry so much about your ability to be able to recover. Now, taking some of that, have any of you guys got resting heart rates or blood pressure that are out of that range? What is it, Thompson? If you don't mind sharing, of course.
It's slightly higher, around 71. Not too crazy, but
That first thing in the morning.
average heart rate over the sleeping period.
Okay. Yeah, a little bit elevated, but that, yeah, you'll be able to fix that. It's nothing excessive. Anybody else? Anybody have elevated blood pressure? Does anybody not know their blood pressure? Sure.
Okay, I have a question.
Go ahead.
So in the beginning of the presentation, you spoke about, the left and the right side of the energy equation, and some people just getting like stuck in the left side of the equation. And what comes to mind when I think of the person who gets stuck, and I thought this is a useful reference, is like someone who's diabetic, right? Someone who's like perpetually stuck in that side. Does that feel accurate? Like a diabetic just almost doesn't have the ability to use fat for fuel?
Almost, yeah, it's really accurate. So metabolic, just to say, let's call it metabolic dysfunction, will affect our ability to be able to get anything within the mitochondria because there's already too much in there. So there's so many substrates in there that it doesn't want it anymore. So it sends out a message to the rest of the body saying, I don't want any more substrates.
Yeah, which
So
makes sense.
100%. And that's why they get so dictated by their appetite, because they'll eat glucose, they'll run out of it really fast because it's all they're using, and then they get extremely hungry really quickly.
Yeah. So make an argument for me. You kind of did it already, but I think this paints a point for everybody. So someone who's diabetic, and let's say we put them on a slightly calorically depleted diet or a very calorically depleted diet. Their likelihood of burning fat, even in a deficit, is going to be significantly less until they get rid of this metabolic gridlock, so to speak. But there's got to be some nuance there with like, if someone has diabetes per se, that's very different than someone who just has, an abundance of excess calories for some short period of time. So how long, this is very subjective, but what is an approach you might suggest for someone who's diabetic? Is it simply just time in like really low calorie states or time in really low carbohydrate states to reestablish the insulin sensitivity or insulin function? Because like I've got a client or previously had a client who was, basically diabetic. We put him in caloric deficit. We did fasting. His body just wouldn't drop any fat. He like just held it. And it's in, so it really set me down this spiral of thinking about how different people are metabolically. Because everyone on the internet is spouting just caloric deficit. I'm like, dude, it's just not. It's like, it's obviously a factor, as you say, but like, there's so much more at play. So, understanding someone who's diabetic and helping them become metabolically flexible, I think that's obviously the far end of the continuum, but everyone's on that continuum, right? So, someone who's diabetic is metabolically broken, someone who's really metabolically flexible uses fat for fuel, and everyone's somewhere between there. So if we can create a process for getting people from this, basically diabetic state to metabolically flexible and understanding every variable in the middle, that seems like a super interesting like case study.
It is. So without getting too deep into it, because we lose our ability to even use carbohydrates and get them into the mitochondria, there's a block here. So the enzyme here gets blocked called PDH, right?
Yep.
And that's blocked by an enzyme called PDK, right? Let's not go through that in too much detail. But this PDK is not just influenced by the amount of food we eat. It's influenced by lipopolysaccharides, so like bad bacteria within our gut. It's influenced by inflammation, by reactive oxygen species. So in certain circumstances, you'll have people like, so say like a type 2 diabetic who should just, it should just work to pull calories, right? It should just work. But they can't use carbohydrates because they have so much inflammation and reactive oxygen species in a bad gut. And they can't use fat because they have metabolic gridlock. So they just get this vicious cycle where nothing is happening, or they're making energy at very low yield from carbohydrates in anaerobic glycolysis. So it's trying to. When you try and look for a mechanism in someone like that, it can be really hard. So someone's got type 2 diabetes. Yeah, we got to drop food intake for sure. But what else is happening? Is it a digestive problem? Is it an inflammation problem? Is it a reactive oxygen species problem? It's probably all of them, but trying to find the biggest lever to pull is the hardest bit. So what I'm saying is, is there a way that we can force fat metabolism? Probably the ketogenic diet in that circumstance.
So, is there
Probably.
any support for PDH or PDK in that case? Like, is there other than like dropping oxidative stress and LPS, would that be your best support?
Melatonin dry, like will affect PDK big time. So like really high dose melatonin will help people become more metabolically flexible. It'll help people sleep as well.
How high is really high dose?
I've seen studies up to 150 milligrams. That's real high though. Like that's
Good
crazy
luck.
high. I'm not saying to anyone in this room to take 150 milligrams of melatonin. You won't wake up for like 3 days. But like it's out there. And I've started to mess around with melatonin with clients a lot more recently than I used to. So there is ways to inhibit that enzyme as well, but generally it's controlling inflammation.
That's great.
Now, there's issues and there's genetic issues in people like that as well. So, like, if you go through the research on people who can't make that swing, some people have these genetic idiosyncrasies where they just don't use carbs well. It sucks. So they're really hard to predict. And you'll never know until you go really low carbohydrate diet.
Yeah, so that's the stuff we, Greg and I were having a private conversation this morning about digging a little bit deeper into genetics and understanding the genetic influences of metabolism and muscle building and all the variables that influence performance. So we'll be doing some deep dives into that. So, Greg, can we just like summarize here with a few major takeaways? Guys, it sounds like I'll summarize with my takeaways. It sounds like paying attention to a few basic metrics. Make sure your resting heart rate is not elevated. Make sure your blood pressure is not elevated. Make sure your glucose isn't elevated. One of my subjective measures is how do I feel after I eat? If I eat a carbohydrate meal, do I feel sleepy afterwards? If I feel sleepy afterwards, something's wrong with my carbohydrate metabolism. If I need a cup of coffee in the afternoon, something's wrong with my carbohydrate metabolism. And so if you guys feel that way, talk to your coach and start taking necessary steps to change it. Yeah, if your sleep is disrupted and you feel like you're waking up in the middle of the night, that could be a carbohydrate metabolism issue. That could be an adrenaline issue, but usually one and the same. If you have in chronic inflammation, if you feel like you're always holding water, that could be that's certainly an energy metabolism thing. So that's my big takeaways. Does that punch most boxes there, Greg?
Yeah, I think so. I think when we look at this as a marker, it's great because we have really easy things to eat. It's really easily tracked. So, like, if people do have high blood pressure, high resting heart rate, man, like, if people come into me, I love all the fancy stuff. But if people come into me with those markers, I'm like, first thing, blood pressure, resting heart rate, aerobic work, let's go. Because we can fix this stuff, and you can change lives just by changing those markers. And then in the meantime, you'll affect all those other things. So, like, inflammation, all those other words that we hear through diet and exercise. So if any of you are struggling with any of those markers, sleep is still just that big overarching one for a lot of people, though, because most of you guys in the room really eat well, but not everyone takes sleep as seriously.
So, Greg, I have a question to follow that up. It sounds like metabolic flexibility is not a switch, it's a continuum. I know we have a metabolic assessment currently. Would that be the closest version we have or we could create to a metabolic assessment diagnostic, so to speak? Let's say everyone in this room fits somewhere on that continuum. If we had to create the smallest number of variables to measure someone's metabolic flexibility, one, does it exist anywhere else? Two, what's it going to take to create it? Do you understand the question?
I do. I'm just trying to think. It would give you an idea. It would give you an idea of insulin resistance. It may not give you an idea of pure metabolic flexibility.
What could we do? Like, what would it require? Lab testing, subjective metrics, objective metrics. Like, I gotta believe we could put this together.
Yeah, well, the only test that I know, I've never seen Mito swab. I know Mito swab will really dig into mitochondrial function. But a organic acid test gives you a good idea who's using carbs well. A really good idea. So if anyone's ever done an organic acid test, it's a urine test, but it'll tell you how much lactate you have, how much pyruvate you have, and it'll tell you really quickly if you're using carbohydrates effectively. That's what we used with Gavin's client, who just came third in the client of the month. His thing was just a transition to low carbohydrate diet. That's what changed him because he
Chris
couldn't use
Clark.
carbs.
Is he the one who couldn't eat carbs for 3 days? Or like was he the transition?
Because he thought he was going to crash his car. So organic
Well, if
acid testing.
you guys didn't see his transformation, you should look in the group. It was remarkable. Great job, Greg. I know you played a big part in that.
So yeah, we could make it, but I think organic acid test is normally a really good way to assess that.
Thank you.
Anybody else got any questions, guys? Still got 10 minutes. Anything nutritionally is fine.
Has everyone had a chance to read through the My Nutrition Philosophy document? I suggest you do it. It comes through your email early in your onboarding. Look for it. It's also available in Academy. If you guys don't find it, let me know and I'll drop it in the Telegram group later today or tomorrow. I suggest you read it because it gives you not just what not to do, but what to do when it comes to nutrition. Obviously, right now, when it comes to nutrition, follow what your coach is doing, but conceptually, long term, you can understand why we make the decisions we make. And really, it's trying to mitigate three primary things, right? You're trying to mitigate oxidative stress, insulin resistance, or optimize insulin sensitivity, and inflammation. Those are your kind of three primary targets that we're playing. And then obviously we want a control for protein, right? Control for high quality protein and make sure your digestion is on point and things like that. But that document does a good job of describing the simple action items for the rest of your life based on the most effective dietary approach that we can come up with, right? So, you can make an argument that someone may need vegan diets at certain times in their life, and someone may need carnivore diets at certain times in their life, but those are situational and very, very specific. Most humans, if you're metabolically healthy, should have diversity in your diet. You should have protein, you should have carbs, you should have vegetables, you should certainly have fats. But if you're not metabolically flexible, or if you have some gut dysfunction, then you start looking to add in things or subtract things that ultimately help your body heal. So we're trying to move in the direction of higher performance through healing the system. So that's really how we look at it, guys. Everyone's like, oh, this works really well for me. Like, great. That only tells me you're fucked up to begin with, and now we're moving in the direction of being better. Like, I need to do carnivore. Okay, awesome. But like, if broccoli makes you sick, you got a problem. Right? Like, that's a simple way to think of it. Like, some guys are like, I eat a piece of broccoli and I feel terrible. Okay, well, if broccoli's making you sick, like, if broccoli's going to take you out, you got big problems. So that's a good way to think of it, is like, conceptually, there's the more healthy you are, the easier your digestion is across the board. Well, so is Chad still here? Chad, what's carnivore Chad, Greg? Is he not here on the call, but is he still in the community?
Yeah.
Normally he just like lingers around everywhere. I haven't seen him.
I
His
haven't
last
seen Chad on the calls in a while.
now, he usually comes on Saturdays. I'm not sure he's not coming. He's probably got a girlfriend. But he was one of those guys who, like, I worked with him for a year. He goes, Ben, I can't eat broccoli. I go, what are you talking about? He's like, it just destroys me. I was like, and do you think this is normal? He's like, yeah, it must be me. I'm like, no, man, you're fucked up. We gotta fix it. He just thought it was like normal. I'm like, it's a problem, man.
Chad is the perfect example of situational dieting
Yeah.
because he had a messed up gut, couldn't eat fiber in any way, shape, or form. Went carnivore, felt great. And I don't rag on carnivore. I used to. Chad Patras, yeah. I used to rag on carnivore, don't get me wrong, with it. I saw a lot of people get really good results with it. And you see, it situationally does brilliantly for people with digestive issues because you remove all of the majority of triggers for people. But it just created another problem for him inevitably down the line. And now we're trying to reverse that, right? So you're trying to get someone to a position not where they have to be restrictive to have good gut health, but they're able to eat anything they want within reason and have good gut health.
Gents, get back to your family, get back to your life. Oh, there's some question. How does the carnivore diet affect the diversity of the gut microbiome? How important is the microbiome when it comes to diet? Oh, geez, that's a deep one. How long you got, Des? Greg, I'll let you feel that's your space, man.
We can answer another time if it's too long. It's all good.
I don't know. We'll summarize it anyway. So the carnivore diet will affect the gut microbiome in one way because we've got bacteria within our gut that only feeds off protein. So it's called proteobacteria. It's an easy way to think about it, right? Now that bacteria, when overgrown, is a problem. But some people just digest proteins really, really well, so not much of it actually gets down into your large intestine. So some people get away with it when they eat carnivore diet. I would argue the point that inevitably it'll catch up on them though, if that's the only way they eat, because all the beneficial bacteria within our microbiome feeds off only what, like, prebiotics, I guess we'd call them. So like vegetable fibers, not necessarily vegetable, but fibers in general. And the microbiome is one of the most important, and I call it organelles in our body, because it's not actually us. We are getting this bi-directional feedback between us and the bacteria that live there. So what we feed it will directly affect our health. So the I would say the microbiome is extremely important, and the fiber that we feed it will tell us how healthy we're going to be, genuinely. And the more that comes out now, the more I start to realize that it's integral to our health that we eat a lot of fiber.
Thanks a lot.
No probs. Brian, cauliflower.
Cauliflower and cabbage cause massive gut pressure and gas. What can I be doing better?
Initially, you'd probably want to pull those out, right? Now, it can be an issue of just slowly titrating it up. So fiber, you can think of like a muscle, right? If I gave you 10 grams of supplemental fiber and you drank it, you're going to get gas, bloating, and diarrhea, constipation, a combination of all of them. So with fiber, it's very much a titration up. But if those in particular cause you issues, you'd probably be thinking it's what you would call like loss of brush border enzymes. So like the lining of our gut has these like brush borders that help to digest carbohydrates like that. And sometimes as we age or through damage, we lose them. So you can help to replace them. You can either supplement and see if that makes things any better with brush border enzymes, or take digestive enzymes, because that could be the issue as well. So the digestive enzymes that are released from your pancreas break down that fiber. So that could be the problem. Other than that, I would say it's a bacterial imbalance somewhere. No problem.
All right, gents, let's wrap. You guys go enjoy your families. Thank you for being here on Wednesday, Greg. I appreciate you staying up so late, man. So for those of you that don't know, it's now midnight for Greg. So Greg, we appreciate you staying up so late to teach us, man. We value very much your wisdom, is extensive and appreciated. Thank you.
And Des stayed up till 12. Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Des. All right, guys. Talk soon.